Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation. I was out the 12th Hour in Elgin, Texas. Okay, we're going to do a continuation on a symbolic code, number 11, 11 symbolic code number 7. And we're in part 2 of Necessity for the Sealing. And we're on page 10, and it's, we're going to be dealing with Isaiah 27, 1 through 13. It says, in that day, Yahshua, with his sore and great and strong sword, shall punish Leviathan, the piercing serpent, even Leviathan, that crooked serpent, and he shall slay the dragon that is in the sea. And that day, send you unto her a vineyard of the red wine. I, the Yahshua, do keep it. I will water it every moment, lest any hurt it. I will keep it night and day. Fury is not in me, who would sit the briars and thorns against me in the battle. I would go through them. I would burn them together, or let him take a hold of my strength, that he may make peace with me, and he shall make peace with me. He shall cause them that come of Jacob to take root. Israel shall blossom and bud and fill the face of the world with fruit. Hath he smitten him as he smote those that smote him? Or is he slain according unto the slaughter of them that are slain by him? In the measure when it shooteth forth, thou wilt debate with it. He stayeth the rough wind and the day of the east wind. By this therefore shall the iniquity of the Jacob be purged, and this is all the fruit to take away his sin. When he maketh all the stones of the altar as chalk stones that are beaten in sunder, for the groves and the images shall not stand up, yet the defense city shall be desolate, and the habitation forsaken, and left like a wilderness. There shall the calf feed, and there shall he lie down, and consume the branches thereof, when the boughs thereof are withered. They shall be broken off. The woman come, or the women come, and set them on fire. For it is a people of no understanding. Talking about the Seventh-day Adventists today, this is what this prophecy is for. And the Davidian Seventh-day Adventists now, because their time is over also. We're in the time of antithetical David, the everlasting kingdom of heaven, and the process of being set up here on earth. Daniel 2:44. Therefore, he that made them will not have mercy on them, and he that formed them will show them no favor. It shall come to pass in that day that the Yahshua shall beat off from the channel of the river unto the stream of the Egypt, and ye shall be gathered one by one, O ye children of the Israel. And it shall come to pass on that day that the great trumpet shall be blown, and they shall come which were ready to perish in the land of Assyria, and the outcast in the land of Egypt, and shall worship the Asher in the holy mount at Jerusalem. Isaiah 27:1. And that day the Asher with the sore and great and strong sore shall punish Leviathan, the piercing serpent, even Leviathan that crooked serpent, and he shall slay the dragon that is in the sea. For the day, this is to happen, must be found in the preceding chapter. For this verse is introduced with the words, "in that day." Therefore, to find the time, we shall read Isaiah 26:20-21. "Come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers, and shut thy doors about thee. Hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment, until the indignation be overpast. For behold, the Asher cometh out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. For the earth also shall disclose her blood and shall no more cover her slain." For the Yahweh's indignation has come upon the earth, and Yahweh's people, I'm glad to take shelter somewhere. These verses place the fulfillment of this prophecy in the time of the end of the world, when Yahweh will punish the wicked and raise the righteous. Okay. Isaiah 27:1. "In that day the Yahshua," this is the son of Yahweh, "with his sword and great and strong sword, shall punish Leviathan," Satan, "the piercing serpent, even Leviathan that crooked serpent, and he shall slay the dragon that is in the sea." From the reading of these verses, we clearly see that when the Yahweh punishes the inhabitants of the earth, and the earth discloses her blood, Leviathan will be punished, and the dragon that is in the sea is to be slain. Who is the serpent? It is Satan. But how is Satan to be punished and slain at the time this chapter applies? For help on this point, let us turn to Isaiah 14:1-14. "For the Yahshua will have mercy on Jacob." Now, that's who we are, house of David, right here today. We inherited our mantle from Verlis Johnson, and took for Esau at Kermit in 2002-2003, and will yet choose Israel. Okay. So the true Israel is David, be the house of David, and sit them in their own land, and the strangers shall be joined with them, and they shall cleave unto the house of Jacob. And the people shall take them and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel shall possess them in the land of the Asher for servant and handmaid, and they shall take them captive whose captives they were, and they shall rule over their oppressors. And it shall come to pass in the day that Yahshua shall give thee rest from thy sorrow and from thy fear and from the hard bondage wherein thou wast made to serve, that thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon, and say, how hath the oppressor seed, the golden city seed? Yahshua hath broken the staff of the wicked, and the scepters of the rulers. He who smote the people in his wrath with a continual stroke, he that ruled the nations in his anger, is persecuted and none hindereth, for the whole earth is at rest, and is quiet. They break forth into singing, yes, the fir trees rejoice at thee. And the cedars of the Lebanon said, since thou art laid down, no fellow is come up against us. Hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth, that hath raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nation. All they shall speak and say unto thee, art thou also become weak as we? Art thou become like unto us? Thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy vials, the worm is spread unto thee, and the worms cover thee. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which weakened the nation? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into the heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of Yahweh. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. For the king of Babylon in this chapter is connected with Lucifer, because whatever Babylon aspires and sets out to do is instigated by the Satan himself. Likewise, we find the same to be true in the following account of the Taurus, Ezekiel 28:1-2, 13-17. For the word of the Yahshua came again unto me, saying, son of man, say unto the prince of Taurus, this is the Yahshua, son of Yahweh, because thine heart is lifted up, and thou hast said, I am a God, I sit in the seat of the Yahweh, in the midst of the sea, yet thou art a man, and not Yahweh. Though thou sit thine heart as the heart of Yahweh, thou hast been in Eden, the garden of the Yahweh. Every precious stone was thy covering, the sardis, topaz, and the diamond, the beryl, the onyx, and the jasper, the sapphire, the emerald, and the carbuncle, and gold, the workmanship of thy tabrets and of thy pipes, were prepared in thee than the day that thou wast created. Thou art the anointed cherub that covereth, and I have set thee so. Thou wast upon the holy mountain of the Yahweh. Thou hast walked up and down in the midst of the stone of the fire. Thou wast perfect in thy ways from this day, from the day that thou wast created till iniquity was found in thee. By the multitude of thy merchandise they have filled the midst of thee with the violent, and thou hast sinned. Therefore I will cast thee as profane out of the mountain of the Yahweh, and I will destroy thee, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of the fire. Thine heart was lifted up because of thy beauty. Thou hast corrupted thy wisdom by the reason of thy brightness. I will cast thee to the ground. I will lay thee before kings that they may behold thee. You recognize this description as being that of the Lucifer, yet the prophecy is addressed to the prince of Tyrus, just as Isaiah 14 associates the king of Babylon with Lucifer. By this we are to understand that both Tyrus and Babylon are instigated by Satan and are set up to do on the earth the identical wicked work that Satan had originally done in heaven, But we are here told that Satan's defeat and these endeavors will be complete and shameful. Isaiah 27:1-2, in that day Yahshua with his sore and great and strong sword shall punish Leviathan the piercing serpent, or even Leviathan that crooked serpent, and he shall slay the dragon that is in the sea, and that day shall send you unto her a vineyard of red wine. And the day that the dragon is slain in the sea, someone is to sing of a vineyard of the red wine. There is then to be a vineyard of the red wine, and there is to be singing about it because it is a rich vineyard producing good fruit, righteous people. The song for the vineyard is a song when the Yahweh punishes Leviathan. It cannot be sung now because Yahweh does not yet have this rich productive vineyard. The rest of this chapter tells how he is to obtain it. Isaiah 27:3. I, the Yahshua, do keep it. I will water it every moment. Lest any hurt it, I will keep it night and day. This obviously is the Yahshua's vineyard, which he is to have at that day, and which he is to keep night and day, lest any hurt it. If he must so carefully keep it, lest any hurt it, the vineyard must therefore exist in a time of the danger. Isaiah 27:4-5. Fury is not in me, who would set the briars and thorns against me in the battle. I would go see them. I would burn them together, or let him take a hold of my strength, that he may make peace with me, and he shall make peace with me. For the implication here is that there are briars and thorns, and that if they should be set against him in the battle, they would be destroyed together. For the briars and thorns must represent people who fight against Yahweh by the fighting against his truth. This scripture says that those who fight against him will surely perish together, but he who takes a hold of Yahshua's strength, the Son of Yahweh, for peace, will receive peace. In other words, the briars and thorns need not remain such in this case. They can be converted if they would. These verses therefore clearly present a choice. If there is offered unto a people the choice to take hold of the Yahshua and live our battle against him and perish, that choice must be coming to them in a message in the present truth of the day, each day. If they take his truth each day, then they would be taking hold of his strength. And those who choose to fight the truth will not win, but will perish together. Anciently, Yahweh was furious with his people. And was tempted to cast them away forever, root and branch. But here he says that fear is not in him. This is Yahshua actually talking here. Anciently, Yahshua was furious with his people and was tempted to cast them away forever, root and branch. But here he says that fury is not in him. He is long-suffering toward his people, and he is anxious that all should take hold of his strength and be at peace with him. That very choice is found in the message we bear today. As the message makes its way through the ranks of the church, we see some take the hold of his strength and rejoice in the truth. And we also painfully see the briars and the thorns sit in the battle against the Yahshua. Though fury is not in the Yahshua, and though he is not willing that any should perish, yet he declares that those who will not take the hold of his strength by accepting his present truth on a daily basis, that's Matthew 24:45-46, must lose out. Isaiah 27:6, he shall cause them that come of Jacob to take root. Israel shall blossom and bud and fill the face of the world with the fruit. Those that come of Jacob will take root. Now this is the house of David. That's who we are. And typical David. It implies that not all are coming. And this is right. Gilead Center started at this house of David in 1970. But those that do come will take root. Okay. So those that come now to the house of David during the 12th hour will take root. The others will die. Those that take root are not of the Jacob. We all know that the scriptures say that the 144,000 are all of Jacob, for they are Israelites. The verse we are now studying says that those that come of Jacob shall take root, and Israel shall blossom and grow and fill the face of the world with fruit. These words are so plain that they do not need interpretation. Using the analogy that an apple tree bears apples and not a plum, or sometime, or something else, we may draw the lesson that the Israelites that take root, the 144,000, will bring forth converts to Israel. These converts will be Israelites either by birth or by being grafted in, as the Paul describes in the Romans 11. We have learned as so far in our study of this chapter that when the briars and thorns fight against Yahweh, it is at that time that those of Jacob shall take root. That could not be after the close of probation, for it is after they take root that they fill the face of the world with fruit. Oh, we got a lot of time ahead of us yet. For the Daniel tells us in the second chapter that in the days of the ten-toed kings, that those Arab kings that surrounds Israel over today in the land of Israel, in the 12th hour, they've been destroyed every day by Israel herself. Daniel tells us in the second chapter that in the days of the ten-toed king, the Yahshua, son of Yahweh, was set up a kingdom, that's Daniel 2:44 and 45, which he said was represented by the stone that was cut out of the mountain without the hands, and that stone would break in pieces all other kingdoms and grow to be a great mountain that would fill the whole earth. Daniel, in the reality, said the same thing that Isaiah is saying in the 27th chapter we are considering today. It is those of the Jacob that take root, that make up the stone that Daniel saw. And as the stone is small and the mountain large, it shows that the majority will not take a hold of the strength of Yahweh, of the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, but will perish while the minority will escape and take root and bring in converts that will fill the face of the world with fruit. What Isaiah calls a vineyard, Daniel calls a kingdom, the kingdom of Yahweh, Isaiah 27:7. Number 8, hath he smitten him as he smote those that smote him, or is he slain according unto the slaughter of them that are slain by him? And the measure when it shooteth forth, thou wilt debate with it. He stayeth the rough wind in the day of the east wind. There are two winds mentioned here, the rough wind and the east wind. At the time when Yahweh sure delivers a message of the choice to his people to separate those who make peace with him and those who do not, and at the time his vineyard shoots forth, there are to be two winds. The rough wind we understand to be Yahshua's wind, which he stops in the day of the east wind, Isaiah 27:9. By this therefore shall the iniquity of Jacob be purged, and this is all the fruit to take away his sin, when he maketh all the stones of the altar as chalk stone that are beaten in sunder. The groves and images shall not stand up. For the rough wind comes to purify his church, when it blows, fruit will fall. And the words of the Ezekiel, those who do not sigh and cry for all the abominations done in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, will be slain, and only those who take a hold of Yahweh's strength will remain. If all the stones of the altar become as a chalk stone, then the altar will crumble to the ground. The altar is not the entire church, but it is a very important part of the church. It is from the altar that the laity are fed. For the figure used here shows that there is a false leadership, and it is to be brought down. The groves and the images will not stand up, showing that idolatry is among Yahweh's people. There it is right there. And that idolatry is your Lebanites. They're the nephew of Abraham, but they're not of Abraham's seed directly. So idolatry is 100% rife in the Adventist Church today, is among Yahweh's people. And it, too, will be taken away. Well, that took place at Kermit 2002-2003. Yeah. Yahweh took away the leadership, Brother Johnson, and took away all those that stayed with him. And they clung to all their idols that they were having at that time. It is this purging that must come in order to make the vineyard rich and productive, as the verses 2 and 3 describe it as being, for the briars and the thorns must be removed. The message comes preceding this separation, and it did, it came and came. 2002, before we were separated in 2002 at Kermit, in order to prepare Yahweh's people to escape the purging rough wind and to be safe from the time of the trouble represented by the east wind. Isaiah 27:10-11. Yet the defense city shall be desolate, and the habitation forsaken, and left like a wilderness. There shall the calf feed, and there shall he lie down, and consume the branches thereof when the boughs thereof are withered. They shall be broken off. The women come and set them on fire, for it is a people of no understanding. Therefore he that made them will not have mercy on them, and he that formed them will show them no favor. This chapter first describes Yahweh's vineyard in its beautiful and excellent condition, representing Yahweh's church in a future purified state. The verses we are now reading describes the present condition of his church before it is purified. How vastly different is the picture John describes it as being wretched and about to be spewed out. When a man prunes his orchard and he finds dead branches on the trees, he breaks them off and stacks them in piles for someone to burn, for they are useless. It is this illustration that the Isaiah is using for the showing what the Yahweh, or the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, is to do with his people who are represented by the dead branches, people who have no understanding. They are those who are ever learning, but never come to the knowledge of the truth. And that's what we hear, that's what we have here, right here, with these people that are Adventists that we're renting from. Yes, they are branches of the truth, but they are void of the spiritual life. There is something fundamentally wrong with this class of people, because Yahweh is able to make anyone wise. He can make anyone strong. His truth is so simple that though they be fools, they need not err therein. Isaiah 35:8. Therefore all can get understanding. For this reason, those men who get no understanding, Yahweh will destroy without mercy. Or Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, will destroy without mercy. And this work of the separating, Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, keeps the trunk and destroys the branches. Isaiah 27:12-13. And it shall come to pass in that day that the Yahshua shall beat off from the channel of the river and to the stream of Egypt, and he shall, and ye shall be gathered one by one, O ye children of the Israel. And it shall come to pass in that day that the great trumpet shall be blown, and they shall come which were ready to perish in the land of the Assyria, and the outcast in the land of Egypt, and shall worship the Yahshua in the holy mount at Jerusalem. For the children of Israel are to be gathered first one by one, and in that day the great trumpet will be sounded to signalize the commencement of the ingathering of the people who are going to worship in the holy mountain, Jerusalem. In our studies on Isaiah 19, we found that there are to be five cities in Egypt that will speak the language of Canaan, and there is to be a highway between Assyria and Egypt, and Israel is to be a third with them, even a blessing in the midst of the land. It is the great trumpet of the 27th chapter that will save them. It may be that there will be many from Assyria and Egypt that will join the 144,000 and go to worship the Yahshua and the holy mount of Jerusalem. Since Isaiah says they were ready to perish, it may happen just at the making up of the image of the beast, or just in the time of the transition, when the world emerges from the Assyrian period and enters into the period when Babylon the Great rules. This one chapter is made up of only 13 verses. Yet it outlines for us clearly the whole message. Truly, Yahweh has graciously given us truth that no others have, that however puts a great burden, a great responsibility upon us. On volume one of the Shepherd's Rod came, we saw that the message had to be carried to the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and the light we have received from the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, through this chapter is to help us to understand that the Yeshua, Son of Yahweh, expects of us and the magnitudes of the work that is to be done, not only in this SDA church, but also in the world. We ought to be wise and of an understanding heart in the things of Yahweh. We ought daily to be living the truth and making every effort to be at peace with Yahweh the Father and His Son, Yahshua, that we may receive the seal of His protection and approval. Are we getting ready for the great and dreadful days just ahead? We have not a moment to lose if we would be ready on time. All of Yahweh's people is waiting for now is for His. Let's do it again. All that the Yahshua, Son of Yahweh, people is waiting for now is for His saints to receive the seal so that His purified house, church, house of David, will not perish from off the earth forever, but will instead take root and fill the face of the whole world with fruit. Let's go now to 11 symbolic code number 6, and the Baviti Halef, and it was in 1934 that he actually wrote this sermon. It says, faith and work brings rest. For the sermon selected for this issue of the symbolic code was delivered by the Brother Vicky Hall of March 31st, 1934, and again on June the 16th of the same year. Thus, we can see that double emphasis was given of this subject pertaining to the faith and the action needed to permit us to enter into our rest. Obviously, this study was not to be lightly received, but rather to be taken to heart by all the Davidians. Also, the very fact that it is now when the kingdom is at hand, once again being called to our attention. Only serve to underline the contents of this message as containing the valuable meat in the due season that we as a people are very much in need of. May these needs now be fully supplied as we carefully and prayerfully study this message, and may evidence of our profiting by it be manifested in our lives by a great and all-encompassing exercise at the or the simple faith in the Yahshua, Son of Yahweh's wonderful and more promises unto us, resulting in a forward-moving action with the present truth on a daily basis, I might add. I had that at the daily basis. Our press up for this study, Elijah had thought that he alone in Israel was a worshiper of the true Yahweh, that he who reads the hearts of all revealed unto the prophet that there were many others who through the long years of the apostasy had remained true unto him. I have left me, Yahweh said, 7,000 in Israel, all the knees, which have not bowed unto Baal, and every mouth which hath not kissed him. If under the trying circumstances men of the spiritual power, pressed beyond measure, become discouraged and despondent, if at times they see nothing desirable in life, that they should choose it, this is nothing strange or new. Let all such remember that one of the mightiest of the prophets fled for his life before the rage of an infuriated woman, a fugitive, weary and travel-worn, bitter disappointment, crushing his spirit. He asked that he might die, but it was when hope was gone and his life work seemed threatened with defeat that he learned one of the most precious lessons of his life. In the hour of his greatest weakness, he learned the need and the possibility of the trust in Yahweh under or with the circumstances of the most forbidding. Those who, while spending their life energy in the self-sacrificing labor, are tempted to give way to despondency and distrust, may gather courage from the experience of the Elijah, Yahweh's watchful care. His love, his power are especially manifest in the behalf of his servants, whose zeal is misunderstood or unappreciated, whose counsels and reproofs are slighted, and whose efforts toward reform are repaid with the hatred and opposition. It is at the time of the greatest weakness that Satan assailed the soul with the fiercest temptation. It was thus that he hoped to prevail over the son of Yahweh, for by this policy he had gained many victories over man. When the will power weakened and faith failed, and those who had stood long and valiantly for the right yielded unto the temptation. Moses, wearied with the 40 years of the wandering and unbelief, lost for a moment his hold on the infinite power. He failed just on the borders of the promised land. So with the Elijah, he who had maintained his trust in the Yahweh during the years of the drought and famine, he who had stood undaunted before the Ahab, he who throughout that trying day on the Carmel had stood before the whole nation of Israel, the sole witness to the true Yahweh, in a moment of the awareness, allowed the fear of the death to overcome his faith in the Yahshua and his Father Yahweh. And so it is today, when we are encompassed with the doubt, perplexed by the circumstances, or afflicted by the poverty or distress, Satan seeks to share our confidence in the Yahweh. It is then that he arrays before us our mistakes and tempts us to distress Yahweh, to question his love He hopes to discourage the soul and break her hold on the other. Those who are standing in the forefront of the conflict are in peril by the Holy Spirit to do a special work. Will frequently feel a reaction. When the pressure is removed, despondency may shake the most heroic faith and weaken the most steadfast will. But the Yahweh understands, and He still pities and loves. He reads the motives and the purposes of the heart. To wait patiently, to trust when everything looks dark, is a lesson that the leaders of Yahweh's work need to learn. Heaven will not fail them in the day of the adversity. Nothing is apparently more helpless, yet really more invincible, than the soul that feels its nothingness and relies wholly on the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, and the Father Yahweh, not alone for men in the positions of the Lord's responsibility, is the lesson of the Elijah's experience and the learning anew how to trust Yahweh in the hour of the trial. He who was the Elijah's strength is strong to uphold every struggling child of his, no matter how weak. Everyone, He expects loyalty, and unto everyone He grants power according unto the need. In His own strength, man is strengthless, but in the might of the Yahweh, he may be strong to overcome evil and to help others to overcome. Satan can never gain advantage of him who makes Yahweh his defense. Surely, shall one say, in the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, have I righteousness and strength. Fellow a Christian, Satan knows your weakness. Therefore, cling unto the Yahshua, abiding in the Yahweh's love. You may stand every test. The righteousness of Yahshua alone can give you power to stem the tide of the evil that is sweeping over the world. Bring faith into your experience. Let's do that again. Bring the faith in the blood of Yahshua into your experience. Faith in the blood of Yahshua of the everlasting covenant, the new and living way, Hebrews 10:19-20, lightens every burden, relieves every weariness, providences that are more mysterious you may solve by the continued trust in the Yahshua, Son of Yahweh. Walk by the faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua and the path that He marks out, for the trials will come, but go forward. This will strengthen your faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua and fits you for the top service. For the records of the sacred history are written, not merely that we may read and wonder, but that the same faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua which wrought in the Father Yahweh's, the servants of old, may work in us. And no less marked manner will the Yahshua work now, wherever there are hearts of the faith, to be channels of His power. In the vision of the prophets, Ezekiel, there was the appearance of a hand beneath the wings of the cherubim. This is the truth that the Yahweh servant of the Yahweh servants, that it is in the divine power that gives success. Those whom Yahweh employs as his messengers are not to fear that his work is dependent on them. Finite beings are not left to carry this burden of the responsibility. For he who slumbers not, who is continually at work for the accomplishment of his design, will carry forward his work. He will thwart the purposes of the wicked man, and will bring the confusion, the counsels of those who plot mischief against his people. He who is the king, the Yahshua the host, sitteth between the cherubim and amidst the strife and tumult of the nation. He guards his children still when the strongholds of the kings shall be overthrown, when the arrows of the rest shall strike through the hearts of his enemies, his people will be safe in his hands. Prophecy, Kings chapter 13, excerpts only. Okay, that was a long prayer. I thought it was empty. The subject for today is taken from Hebrews 4:1-11. Let us therefore fear, lest a promise being left us of the entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. For unto us was the gospel preached. In other words, for unto us was the plan of the salvation of the blood of the everlasting covenant. Faith in the Yahshua's new and living way, Hebrews 10:19-20, was preached as well as unto them. But the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with the faith in the blood of the Yahshua and them that heard it. For we which have believed in the blood of the Yahshua do enter into his rest. As he said, so you have to keep all the statutes and judgments and all the holy days then of the sanctuary to enter into his rest, as I have sworn in my wrath. If they shall enter into my rest, even though the works were finished from the foundation of the world, for he spake in a certain place of the seventh day on this wise, and the Yahshua did rest, and the Yahweh the Father did rest on the seventh day from all his works, and in this place again, if they shall enter into my rest, seeing therefore that it remaineth that some must enter therein, and they unto whom it was first preached entered not in because of the unbelief and the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua that was to come. We limited a certain day, saying, in the David. That's the day that we're in now, today in the 12th periodic hour. Today, after so long a time, as it is said, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts. For if the Yahshua had given them rest, then would he not afterward have spoken of another day? There remaineth therefore a rest unto the people of the Yahweh. For he that is entered into his rest he also hath ceased from his own works, as Yahweh did from his. Let us labor therefore to enter into that rest, lest any man fall short or fall after the same example of the unbelief. Okay, this brings the end of our study. This hour contacts us at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on our audio archives, hear this message and more. We're going to close now with a song.